All right, so why should I be taking a look at Identity Server? What is it?
So Identity Server, technically speaking, it's a so-called security token service, which is a bit of an abstract term. But it helps you implement things like single sign-on and single sign-out and API access control and kind of things. So I think the important point is it's a framework that allows you to build that stuff yourself, as opposed to like a box product, so to speak. Yeah. So this all started really as a hobby project, I think back in the .NET 3.0 timeframe, when there was this thing released called the Windows Identity Foundation, right? So which for the very first time gave a developer access to all of this complicated stuff like WS Federation and WS Trust. And so I started building a couple of these token services for customers, and then I kind of started to see the grand scheme, kind of like in Matrix, you know, when you start making sense of the green stuff. So I basically thought, okay, I realized that most of the time a token service works to 80% like that, and the 20% are like customizations you make for certain scenarios. So I built this thing called Starter STS on CodePlex.
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
And then from that it became Identity Server 1, which was built on web forms, right? And then a couple of years later, you know, web forms wasn't the hotness anymore.
Right.
So we then Brock Allen came along and we rewrote the thing for MVC. And then maybe 3 years ago, we rewrote the thing again for Katana. Mm-hmm. And
with the Owen stuff, right?
The Owen stuff, right? And as middleware. Mm-hmm. And now, as of today, we are kind of like very, very close, like 2 weeks before we're going to release for ASP.NET Core.
Which is the newest stuff, which works on Linux and Windows and stuff.
Yeah, you know, like in Germany, we have this saying, like when you're building a house, like the first house you build is for your enemy. The second house you build is for a friend, uh-huh. And the third one you want to live in.
That's right, because by that time, you already know how to build it, right?
So that's a bit of like with token services, yeah? So 3 was really good. With 4, I think we are really hitting the sweet spot now between taking away the hard things from developers, so they don't need to understand the protocols, like, you know, they don't need to read the specs. I mean, it would be good if they would read them, but it's not a requirement to get started, mm-hmm. but giving them still enough flexibility to implement all these scenarios, because I think that's where it all came from. We realized that a box product, you name them, yeah, they only can solve like 85% mm-hmm. of the use cases, and then you're hitting a limit and you can't go on. And that's why we decided to build as a framework. So you are building your own identity server if you like, but we are making it really easy for you, and you just have to fill in the blanks, like, you know, your look and feel and to which database you're connecting and all that stuff, which is typically different for every single installation.
So you implemented this thing over and over and over again for various and sundry clients, and you're like, I should probably just write this once, and then you keep using that for your clients, and then other people can now use it as well. Is that about the sum of it?
Yeah, I mean, it all started with implementing the hard stuff and letting people make some changes to, you know, to be good enough for their scenarios. But also over time, the other interesting thing is that the protocols have changed, right? I mean, like when I started, it was all about web single sign-on, and then it was WCF, right? And for the last 5 years, I would say, it's all about, you know, what people call modern applications. It's all about APIs and mobile and JavaScript. And yeah, so the latest incarnation of Identity Server is all about the two most important protocols here, which are OpenID Connect and OAuth.
So you mentioned scenarios. I mean, I'm trying to get my head around, okay, what scenarios does this solve? Do you have like one or two basic scenarios that could help us out?
I mean, I guess there are a couple of observations how we build applications today, right?
Sure.
So if that's the server side, yeah, the two things you're building today are either web apps, right?
Uh-huh.
Or you're building web APIs.
Right.
Right?
I mean, that's where we're at nowadays.
Exactly. Yeah. So The other observation is now, which is maybe different to where we started a couple of years. We know, like, with WIF, it was all the assumption, or with the full .NET framework, it was all the assumption you are on Windows, right? You have the luxury of having this operating system. Well, and also the luxury of all these rich APIs, you know, that's why they came up with these enormously complex things like XML, digital signatures, mm-hmm. and, you know, like, something that you can't implement yourself, and it's hard to find libraries for that on other platforms that are not .NET framework, sure. for example, yeah? So, you know, it's kind of like coming back to least common denominator technologies in a good way that work everywhere. So if it works on a phone, it will work on a Windows computer. Yeah. But if it works on a Windows computer, it doesn't necessarily work on a phone, mm-hmm. right? So we have many, many different clients now these days, yeah? So let's do this. We have browsers, right? Browsers.
Right.
So, and browsers, you know, maybe they, you know, talk to web applications, you know, just opening a URL and sure. that's easy. But we also have JavaScript now running here, right? And they yeah. might talk directly to these guys, right? These guys might talk this way as well, yeah?
So it's a fun graph now.
And it gets more exciting.
Okay.
So, you know, like, let's take the universally accepted symbol for a telephone.
Right, of course.
Yeah. Or a tablet, or, you know, a laptop computer, yeah? They talk like this, okay? So now we have humans as well, okay? Yeah. So this human might use a browser to talk to this, or he might use a phone or a tablet or a computer, or even he might, during the day, you know, at work time, use his laptop, and then he goes on the train and takes his phone out, and in the evening he uses his tablet or whatever. Yeah, so you have the same user here talking to maybe the same backend, but using different clients.
Sure.
Okay, so there's also a very explicit distinction between the two. So users, I like to call them the carbon-based life forms yeah. in your system, whereas these guys are the silicon-based life forms. So the users and clients, mm-hmm. yeah? And obviously, from a security point of view, the rules in a browser are fundamentally different as they are on an Android device or on an iOS device or on, you know, or on a laptop computer or sure. whatever, yeah? And the last interesting one is, you know, servers or like headless devices. Yeah, like things, you know, things.
Yeah, like the Internet of Things, yeah. right? Okay, I got it.
Either that or, you know, like one data center process calling an API, right? There's no user involved here. It's just a, you know, machines talking to each other.
Sure.
Yeah. So how does that work? Yeah. And, you know, and now there might be more APIs involved here. Yeah. So you want to maybe call like this.
So this is a huge headache. Like when I did a MVC a long time ago, when it first came out, I just implemented iIdentity and iPrinciple, and there was some session cookie, and there was some database. You can't do that here.
No. You know, back in the days, you know, there was this magic checkbox, enable Windows integrated authentication, job done, right? But yeah. this kind of assumed everything was living inside one Active Directory, which isn't the case anymore,
no.
right? I mean, that might be your Node.js server calling you, or, you know, whatever. You name the technology of the day. That might be whatever browser using whatever JavaScript framework. That might be whatever native platform you can imagine, right? And you don't want to build APIs for each of them. You want to build one API,
right?
So to make things even more interesting is, you know, in certain scenarios, you know, this guy might call this guy, and for this here, it's totally good enough to know that he trusts a direct caller. But what about if this API needs to know who is the guy in front of the browser, like in a way that it securely conveyed the identity, right? I mean, like here, you don't trust an iPhone calling you. You want to have assurance that there is your user involved in the transaction.
Yeah. And there might also be things that only this particular user can see, but for some reason it's coming from some other place and you don't know yeah. directly who's calling.
So in other words, if you would start implementing security in each of these boxes, it would be a massive, complicated system, a massive headache, and you would end up with lots of code duplication. Or, you know, code that for 90% is copied from here, but because the last 10% need to be different because different use cases and so on. So this is where the STS, the security token service pattern, if you like, comes in.
Okay.
Right, so again, this is nothing new. Looking back at Active Directory, this was called the domain controller. Mm-hmm. Right, but in a Windows world, so to speak, yeah? Whereas the STS is more like a general purpose term. So a domain controller is an STS, right?
Okay.
But an STS is more than just a domain controller.
So we're talking about a token. What is it like? Are you logging on to this and it's giving you something that then you're just passing everywhere?
Exactly. So the STS is a security token service. So its job is, it probably is connected to a user database. So where, for example, you want to store that user information, it might be connected to external providers. Yeah, there might be your Azure Active Directory here or your Google.
Or Facebook, right? Or Twitter,
yeah,
right?
Whatever, you name them. Yeah. So all that complexity of talking to these external services is kind of encapsulated here. The idea is that you're now providing authentication as a service. Okay. Right, so all of your applications now, yeah, they know, they have a trust here to this guy, right? They trust him. So whatever tokens it issues, as long as they come from the trusted STS, we're good to go. How these tokens get created, how the user gets authenticated, and what other external systems we have to contact to make that happen is not their concern, right? They don't want to know about that.
Like, it's nicer if these people don't have to have, because if you have users all over the place, it's a security problem.
Yeah, yeah, and just imagine, yeah, who writes these APIs? These are not security experts.
Right.
They are business domain experts, right? I mean, they implement their invoicing API or, you know, whatever, yeah? And they don't need to understand or don't have to understand how the protocols work to talk to all these various pieces, right? So yeah, the STS is an abstraction, if you like. It's you know, if you think about service-oriented architecture, that's an authentication service,
okay.
Right? So now the next thing that comes up now is how do these applications talk to the SDS? And that's where the protocols come in.
Okay.
Right?
And that's what OAuth and OpenID connect.
Exactly. Yeah, so we have fundamentally two problems here, yeah? One is authentication, right? So we have an application like this guy. He wants to know who is the user. Okay, so you know there's a protocol now how the web application via the browser talks to the STS. The STS sends back a so-called identity token. This thing can be validated, right? And at the end of the day, this can establish a session for that user.
Okay.
Right.
And the token is what's being passed around now. Is it? This is who it is.
So for the authentication case, that's OpenID Connect. For web applications, basically, the identity token gets created by the STS. It flows back to the client application. The client validates it. And having a valid identity token proves that this guy could authenticate with the STS.
I see.
Yeah. Again, the big benefit here is this application here doesn't need to know about Google and Facebook and Azure, whatever. That's all encapsulated here. Just the fact that you get back an identity token means, okay, this guy authenticated, and how he authenticated, I don't care. This was fine because our STS took care of it.
When it gets the token from the web app or from the web API, or does it ask the STS, is this a valid token every time?
There are a couple of ways to do that, and there's a second token, which is called the access token. Yeah. So the identity token is the authentication problem. The access token solves the API access problem.
So authorization type thing.
Well, authorization happens not only here, but it's part of it.
Okay.
Yeah. So after you know who the user is, you typically want to delegate the identity of the user to the next hop, right? And these are APIs typically.
I see.
Yeah. So think of this here, yeah? Like this guy, he wants to get an access token to talk to the API, right? So he talks to the STS, he gets back the identity token to make sure the answer is valid. He gets back an access token and then can forward the access token to the API.
The access token says what resources the user has access to? I'm trying to understand the difference between the two.
Okay, so the identity token is for the client application. So the client application wants to know who is the user. So the audience, if you like, for the identity token is the client.
Okay.
Yeah? And what the client is doing is he validates the token and pulls out the claims, you know, like the user ID and whatever, and done. Okay, the access token is for APIs. So the audience is different. Identity token is for the client, access token is for the APIs. So all the client is doing with the access token is it's forwarding it to the next hop it talks to.
I see. Yeah? Kind of fuzzy still. Maybe you can say
so identity token is for letting the client know who the user is.
Okay.
And the access token is for letting the next hop know who the user is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Obviously, you can add here some logic, like saying like, okay, which client is allowed to talk to which API. This is where your authorization, at least your coarse-grained authorization comes in. So you could have like, you know, a rule saying our in-house client can talk to this API, but the third-party client, he can't,
okay,
for example, yeah? Or you are, there's this concept of a consent screen where you show the user like what APIs, what data is the client trying to access? Are you okay with that? And depending on how you do that, you can select and deselect, like give him access to the public data, but not to the private one.
I see. So in Facebook, when I log in through Facebook, it says, is it okay if they see this, this, and this?
Yeah.
They're talking about you hit okay, and what they're doing is they're getting an ID token and an access token that says they have access to those particular things.
The access token basically contains the so-called scopes, they call them, that this token can be used with.
Got it.
Yeah. With GitHub, for example, they have a screen saying, do you want to grant this application access to the public repos and also the private repos? You can select like only public repos for this client, because I don't want to give a third-party client that some source control system that I want to try access to my company private repos, for
right,
example. Yeah. So yeah, this logic is handled by the STS as well.
So the STS actually goes out and gets a token from some of these people. It wraps it and then it sends it back. Is that about right?
You can do that. That here is typically for the authentication part, right? So sourcing an identity, because Google doesn't know about your APIs. They only know about their own APIs.
Sure.
Right. So what you typically go out to external systems to get the identity of the user, and then the rules how the access token should be generated is typically happening in your own STS. So that's a very good point. Yeah. So one of the main drivers for Identity Server was that you are building this yourself, mm-hmm, right? Because only you know all of the little details of how APIs work in your context. And we totally encourage people, like even if you're using Azure AD, yeah, put Identity Server in front of it, right? Because you are now controlling your own identity platform, but you can outsource the authentication to a third party.
I see. So yeah. Sometimes the STS, when you go here, is literally offloading the authentication to someone else.
It becomes invisible, if you like, yeah? But again, the very important point is all your applications know about is this one STS.
Yes, which makes it a lot easier to manage.
And if you add a new authentication method here, they don't need to know, right? I mean, that's all handled here. Yeah. And if you only have one of them, let's say Azure AD, then you just make it an invisible forwarder, if you like. So you send the user to Azure AD, he logs in, he might already have single sign-on already because his machine is joined, whatever.
Sure.
He comes back to Identity Server. Now we can run all of, because it's a framework, you can write C# code to make everything happen, yeah? And then what's inside of here is totally in your control. Whereas with AD, you are not in control of the contents of the tokens.
I see.
Yeah.
And that way you can sort of have homogeneity when it comes to what's in the tokens across all of your resources.
And even if you might, maybe you decide one day, I don't want to use Azure AD anymore, I want to go to Google Apps, mm-hmm, right? Then all you need to do is change the integration at this point here, but all your applications are unaffected by that.
So often when we look at these kinds of things, there's this thing called a flow. What is a flow, mm-hmm, and what would that look like sort of in this diagram?
Okay, so what the spec means by flow is are the interactions between the client application and the token service.
Okay.
So you can imagine that a JavaScript application does things slightly different than a headless one.
Course.
Yeah. So that's what they mean by flow. Yeah. And the two, well, there were a couple of them, and that's one of the really confusing thing when people start looking at these protocols, because there were a couple of options. Why are there so many options? Well, because they build these protocols with all of these application scenarios in mind, right? So there are older protocols, yeah, like SAML and WS Federation and so on. They only had one specific use case, which was web applications. Mm-hmm. But you know, they were actually built before there was mobile and before there was, you know, the whole JavaScript revolution, sure, and whatever, yeah. So they were basically tasked to create a protocol that will work for all of them, yeah. And they, I think that they reached their goal, but still, you have to understand that certain clients adhere to different rules.
Right.
Yeah. So the most fundamental flow is often called the client credential flow, and that is a kind of a confusing term. The idea is that client credential means there's no user involved. Yeah.
That's where I'm a little confused, right?
So think of this here, yeah. One process running in a data center talking to another process running in a data center.
Like this might be your batch job that needs, yes, to call some APIs.
Right, but you want authentication between the two.
So because you want to be able to know that this particular machine ran that particular process.
Yes, maybe depending on the identity of the client, it gets different access to data here.
Sure.
Right. So that flow is called client credential flow because only the credentials of a client are used and not of a user.
Got it.
Yeah. So the way this works is, to make this more complicated, is in step one, this guy would first go to the token service, authenticate with the token service, say, hey, give me a token for web API, you know, one. Okay? And he will get back a token from here, yeah, the token.
It's like a key that opens this particular access.
Yeah, so more specifically, typically what we call use here is a so-called JSON web token. A chot, as the cool kids say.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah? and it's a JSON structured object. Yeah. And in very essence, what it contains is the client ID, right? Maybe headless. Yeah. The scope. So basically, where can this token be used? That's API one. And maybe some expiration. Yeah. So that's the token. And it's signed, there's a signature hanging off of that so that this recipient can make sure it's coming from the right STS. Okay, and now he has a token, and whenever he wants to talk to the API, he forwards that token now.
So every call to the API has that token embedded,
yes,
in it. And that's why in middleware, you're sort of injecting that so it can pull it off.
Right, so yes. So now, so the way this technically works is that you're putting this token on the authorization header. On the HP request, and then somebody has to, you know, get the token, validate it, and create a claims principle from that, yeah? And that is typically done by middleware, yeah? So, you know, if you're running in ASP.NET, Katana, ASP.NET Core, there's middleware that sits here in the pipeline, it takes the token from the cable, validates it, and basically takes the content of the token and turns it into a claims principle.
And that claims principle is available when you're in the actual, that's why it always felt like kind of magical to me, because it's supposed to just be there. You're doing all this work in middleware.
Yes.
Okay.
So basically in Katana and ASP.NET Core, you can set the current principle in the pipeline. It's on HP context. Mm-hmm. And this kind of materializes as controller.user. Mm-hmm. Right, so if you're writing an API controller, there's a user property on that, and that is exactly this guy.
I see.
Yeah, and the way they validate the token is typically at startup time, they go to the STS, download some metadata, which contains like the public key stuff, and then from that point on, there's no communication necessary anymore to the STS. They can just validate those tokens.
And that's, yeah? Validation's happening in middleware.
Yes.
Okay, I see. So the first time it connects to this, it downloads all the stuff that it needs, the public key, to make sure that the token's been signed correctly. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. So that's one very common scenario. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other one we're going to show or talk about later in demo is what is called a hybrid flow.
Okay.
So maybe I'd draw another picture.
Yeah, let's do it.
The hybrid flow is a bit more complicated, but again, the good news is if you're using the middleware, it's all done for you.
So what you're explaining to us is what's happening physically.
Yes.
But in the end, if you set it up right, you'll just get the whatever user and the I principle that's on there, which is the claims principle.
Yeah. But under the covers, it's a bit involved, and We often get questions on GitHub where people are surprised because they have the wrong assumptions how these things work.
Sure.
Yeah, so that's why I think it's useful.
Let's do it.
So let's do this. Here's a browser. Okay. Here's a user. Here's the STS.
Security token server.
Yeah, or identity server for our discussion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And here's a web app. Web app. And here's an API.
Okay.
So you know, basically what happens is, you know, the browser goes here, step zero, yeah, login page, whatever. So what the web application is doing is basically, so this arrow is not useless.
Yeah.
It redirects the user to the token service. Yeah, basically that's, and it says things like, you know, I want to know who the user is, and I also want to talk to this API on behalf of that user.
I see. So what's happening is, like, say you have the authorize attribute on your controller action, it's going to say, I don't know who this is. I'm going to delegate responsibility to the STS server to tell me who it is, and then you get back to me when you're ready.
Yeah, so good point. That's another point of confusion. What does the authorize attribute actually do?
Okay.
Yeah, many people don't know. Yeah, and all the authorize attribute is doing, yeah, like sitting somewhere,
uh-huh.
Yeah, all it does is it looks at the current principle. There's an is authenticated property on it, and if that is not true, it sends back a 401 response.
Which 401 response is, I need to know who this is.
Unauthorized.
Oh, got it.
Yeah? So now what the 401 goes back down the pipeline back to the browser. Now the middleware is catching that. He says, oh, look at that, there's a 401 response. I know how to fix that. And then he turns that 401 into a 302.
Which is a redirect.
A redirect to the token service.
I see. Okay, yeah. But I could go in there and during every beginning of every session, I could set the current principle is authorized to true, and this would all just sort of magically go away, but that would be bad, right?
Sure. The whole idea is that whenever you have an unauthenticated user, the OpenID Connect middleware knows how to fix that.
I see.
Yeah. So now what we're basically going to send here is we're going to what is called the authorize endpoint. Yeah, authorize.
Yes.
Like this.
And we'll spell correct this in post, of course.
And there's a thing called the client ID. Okay, client ID, let's call it MVC for now. Okay, so there's say, okay, I'm the MVC client, and I give me, please, access to so-called scopes. And that's a bit of a confusing term. A scope is a resource a client wants to get access to.
So in this case, it would be the API and the web app.
Huh. So in OpenID Connect, identity information is modeled as resources. So your first name is a resource.
Okay.
Yeah, your last name or your email address, they are all resources. And these resources are protected by the STS. So you don't want to give out your telephone number to anyone, right? So a telephone number becomes a protected resource.
I see. So the web app and the API are asking for certain things of the STS, and it has to ask permission for them.
Yes.
Like your name and your, like, for example, this web app might not need your address, but this API might need your address, and so it's got to request those resources.
Forget the API for now.
Yeah.
It's just the web app, yeah? For now, the web app sends the request.
Got it.
Yeah? So the one scope you have to ask for, which is mandatory, is called OpenID. And OpenID means give me the unique user ID of that user, right? And then there are optional ones, maybe email, okay? And now he also says, and by the way, another resource I want to access is the API.
Okay.
Right? So now all of that information is sent to the STS. And now you can write your custom logic saying, okay, that's the MVC client. Is he allowed to see the email address of Seth or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, things like that. Is this client allowed to access the API at all? Or, you know.
Or not.
All of that logic can happen now. So what the STS will do now is it basically will show a login page. Maybe. Maybe it goes to another external system, whatever. And That is, you know, that's our step one, if you like. That's step two. Step three, that's optional, is called consent. Yeah, so you can, if you want, ask the user for permission. Do you want to release your email address to this application?
Okay.
Yeah. So that's optional, and typically for first-party applications, you rarely do that. So, for example, Gmail doesn't ask you if it can access your email account. It wouldn't make sense, right? But if Google gives third-party applications, like your, let's say, your iPhone mail app wants to access your Gmail account, they ask you, "Are you okay with giving iOS mail access to your email account?"
And this might be useful if you're writing an application that later someone else is going to use an
API
for.
Third parties. So yeah, so you know, login, consent, we're all good, And then, so that's the way in. Let's take a different color for the way out. So now, we are basically, going back to the client application.
It gets a token that it passes back. Is that right?
But basically, technically, it's a post.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a form post, and this form here contains the tokens.
Got it.
Yeah. So on that. Post, there's the ID token and there's the access token. Yeah, so we are posting that back to the application, and this is a bit simplified, but you know, just to get the idea. And now the middleware is taking over again, right? So it's basically a post to an endpoint owned by the middleware, and it will validate the identity token. And if that token is fine, it will basically establish a local session with the browser by setting a cookie.
With the OpenID in there?
If you don't do anything special, the contents of the identity token will become the contents of the cookie.
I see.
But you can write some code to say, like, I only care about his email address, but maybe not. You know, there's more stuff in it, like protocol-related stuff that you might not care about, so you can strip that out.
But the idea is that this now is persisted on the session via the cookie.
Yes.
Okay.
So now that the user is signed into this application, that was the first problem, authentication.
Right.
Now this here is a simplified flow, and this is not actually how we do it. So the access token here, as you can see, it would be transmitted via the browser of the user. This is what we typically want to avoid, right? Because the user's machine is typically the weakest point in the whole system. He might sit at at Starbucks and in the hacked Wi-Fi,
Because I could take that cookie and then put
not the cookie, but the access token.
Right.
And then the attacker, that would has access to the local network where this guy sits in, could now start calling the API, impersonating the user
with that token.
Yes.
Got it.
That's why it's also called a bearer token. Right? If you are the bearer of that token, you can do whatever you want. So that's, we want to avoid that. So imagine in the same Wi-Fi, there's the bad guy here, Mallory, as we call him. And he now can read that traffic, and that wouldn't be good because he could steal the access token and could talk to the API. So that's what we want to avoid. And that's where the hybrid flow comes in. Hybrid is basically says some protocol interaction happens on the front channel, and some happens on a back channel.
Okay. I see. Okay. Okay.
So let's take.
We're running out of colors, but.
Yeah. So basically, what the hybrid flow changes is it doesn't send the access token here. Okay? It sends what we call a code. So think of a code as a random number, a one time token that you can use to get the actual access token. Yeah? Yeah, security's hard.
Security's hard, kids. I mean, I'm just saying, seriously.
So this code can now be used like this. So the web application, actually the middleware is doing that, it opens a back channel communication to the SDS, sends along that code, and authenticates itself. So that's a client, right? A client has a secret, so there's an authentication happening here. And what comes back from here is the actual access token.
So there's what security's hard, kids. So it sends, the SDS says, here, I'm going to give you this temporary thing, give it to this person.
It does two things. It gives you the temporary thing and it gives you the identity token. The identity token is okay because it can't be abused. It's
the ID of the user, like
right,
a GUID.
But there's a special, so for the guys that are, you know, are really interested in the details, the identity token, which is a signed data structure, contains the hash of the code.
Oh, which is even better, right? Which is even smarter.
Right, so that means you can't separate them anymore, right? They are like cryptographically bound together because there's an attack called the code cut and paste attack, mm-hmm. where you basically exchange the code part, right? And this doesn't work anymore because inside the identity token there's the hash of the code, and now you can verify that whatever code comes along with that identity token actually belongs to that identity.
So this would happen here. It would run the hash. It would see that it would send this back to this, and then it would be like, hey, wait a minute, that's the wrong hash. I'm not giving you access.
You would do the hashing here already.
Got it.
Before you even start using the code, you make sure it belongs to the identity token that you just got back.
Got it. Okay, and then that way the access token never even has to happen in the traffic between the browser and the application. It's happening in the back channel. This might all be like in secret somehow.
Exactly. Yeah. So the whole point of this exercise was you didn't want to expose the access token to the browser.
Okay.
Yeah, because the browser, you know, the browser is a shared execution environment. We don't know what we have running there, right?
Yeah. Be careful.
Yeah.
Well, this is cool stuff.
And then the very last step is basically now that the app can now use the access token to talk to the API on behalf of the user.
Because it was in one of the scopes.
Yes.
Okay. And so that's what when you ask for permission, you're asking for permission of certain identity information as well as certain resources.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the scope is.
Mm-hmm.
Is that why every time you say scope, you're like, well, so-called scope, is it because it means a lot of things to a programmer?
So. There's some history around that, yeah? So what we've just seen is kind of like a combination of two protocols in action. One is called OpenID Connect and one is OAuth. So OAuth is basically everything that involves access tokens is OAuth, and that has been around for longer. So OAuth came around, I don't know, a couple of years ago, and they introduced the scope parameter. And in their world, scopes were always access to resources,
mm-hmm.
yeah? So now, OAuth was missing the crucial first part, the authentication piece. So they added OpenID Connect on top of that, said, okay, OAuth is widely deployed, so let's use something that's widely deployed and just add the missing pieces on top. So now the OpenID Connect guys had two options, right? Either they invent a new parameter to model their resources, or they just piggyback on what's there. And that's why they dual-purpose kind of the scope parameter, and that is very confusing to people starting with that because it's, you know, identity and APIs are two different things, but if you think about it that they are modeling identity as a resource that you're protecting, then it starts making sense again.
Okay, well, is this the end of it? Because I want to see some, I feel like I need to look at some code now.
Okay.
Should we do that?
Yeah.
All right, let's go. I think your computer's over there.
Yep.